The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 3, The Yoga of Divine Love. Chapter 6, The Delight of the Divine. Page. This, then, is the way of devotion, and this its justification to the highest and the widest, the most integral knowledge. And we can now perceive what form and place it will take in an integral yoga. Yoga is, in essence, the union of the soul with the immortal being and consciousness and delight of the divine, effected through the human nature with the result of development into the divine nature of being, whatever that may be, so far as we can conceive it in mind and realize it in spiritual activity. Whatever we see of this divine and fix our concentrated effort upon it, that we can become, or grow into some kind of unity with it, or at the lowest, into tune and harmony with it. The old Upanishad put it trenchantly in its highest terms. Whoever envisages it as the existence becomes that existence, and whoever envisages it as the non-existence becomes that non-existence. So too it is with all else that we see of the divine. That, we may say, is at once the essential and the pragmatic truth of the Godhead. It is something beyond us, which is indeed already within us, but which we as yet are not, or are only initially in our human existence. But whatever of it we see, we can create or reveal in our conscious nature and being, and can grow into it, and so to create or reveal in ourselves individually the Godhead, and grow into its universality and transcendence is our spiritual destiny. Or if this seemed too high for the weakness of our nature, then at least to approach, reflect, and be in secure communion with it is a near and possible consummation. The aim of this synthetic or integral yoga, which we are considering, is union with the being, consciousness, and delight of the divine through every part of our human nature, separately or simultaneously, but all in the long end harmonized and unified, so that the whole may be transformed into a divine nature of being. Nothing less than this can satisfy the integral seer, because what he sees must be that which he strives to possess spiritually and, so far as may be, become, not with the knower in him alone, nor with the will alone, nor with the heart alone, but with all these equally, and also with the whole mental and vital being in him, he aspires to the Godhead, and labors to convert their nature into its divine equivalence. And since God meets us in many ways of his being, and in all tempts us to him even while he seems to elude us, and to see divine possibility and overcome its play of obstacles constitutes the whole mystery and greatness of human existence. And therefore, in each of these ways at its highest, or in the union of all, if we can find the key of their oneness, we shall aspire to track out and find and possess him. Since he withdraws into impersonality, we follow after his impersonal being and delight. But since he meets us also in our personality and through personal relations of the divine with the human, that too we shall not deny ourselves. We shall admit both the play of the love and the delight and its ineffable union. By knowledge, we seek unity with the divine in his conscious being. By works, we seek also unity with the divine in his conscious being. Not statically, but dynamically, through conscious union with the divine will. But by love, we seek unity with him in all the delight of his being. For that reason, the way of love, however narrow it may seem in some of its first movements, is in the end more imperatively all-embracing than any other motive of yoga. The way of knowledge tends easily towards the impersonal and the absolute, may very soon become exclusive. It is true that it need not do so, since the conscious being of the divine is universal, and individual as well as transcendent and absolute. Here, too, there may be and should be a tendency to integral realization of unity. And we can arrive by it at a spiritual oneness with God in man and God in the universe, not less complete than any transcendent union. But still, this is not quite imperative. For we may plead that there is a higher and a lower knowledge, a higher self-awareness and a lower self-awareness, and that here the apex of knowledge is to be pursued to the exclusion of the mass of knowledge, the way of exclusion preferred to the integral way. Or we may discover a theory of illusion to justify our rejection of all connection with our fellow men and with the cosmic action. The way of works leads us to the transcendent, whose power of being manifests itself as a will in the world, one in us and all. By identity with which we come, owing to the conditions of that identity, into union with him, as the one self in all, and as the universal self and Lord in the cosmos. And this might seem to impose a certain comprehensiveness in our realization of the unity. But still, this too is not quite imperative. For this motive also may lean towards an entire impersonality and, even if it leads to a continued participation in the activities of the universal Godhead, may be entirely detached and passive in its principle. It is only when delight intervenes and that the motive of integral union becomes quite imperative. This delight, which is so entirely imperative, is the delight in the divine for his own sake and for nothing else. For no cause or gain whatever beyond itself. It does not seek God for anything that he can give us, or for any particular quality in him, but simply and purely because he is our self, and our whole being, and our all. It embraces the delight of the transcendence, not for the sake of transcendence, but because he is the transcendent, the delight of the universal, not for the sake of universality, but because he is the universal. The delight of the individual, not for the sake of individual satisfaction, but because he is the individual. It goes behind all distinctions and appearances, and makes no calculations of more or less in his being, but embraces him wherever he is, and therefore everywhere embraces him utterly in the seeming less as in the seeming more, in the apparent limitation as in the revelation of the illimitable. It has the intuition and the experience of his oneness and completeness everywhere. To seek after him for the sake of his absolute being alone, is really to drive at our own individual gain, the gain of absolute peace. To possess him absolutely indeed is necessarily the aim of this delight in his being. But this comes when we possess him utterly, and are utterly possessed by him, and need be limited to no particular status or condition. To seek after him in some heaven of bliss is to seek him not for himself, but for the bliss of heaven. When we have all the true delight of his being, then heaven is within ourselves, and wherever he is, and we are, there we have the joy of his kingdom. So, too, to seek him only in ourselves and for ourselves is to limit both ourselves and our joy in him. The integral delight embraces him not only within our own individual being, but equally in all men and in all beings. And because in him we are one with all, it seeks him not only for ourselves, but for all our fellows. A perfect and complete delight in the divine, perfect because pure and self-existent, complete because all-embracing as well as all-absorbing, is the meaning of the way of bhakti for the seeker of the integral yoga. Once it is active in us, all other ways of yoga convert themselves, as it were, to its law and find by it their own richest significance. This integral devotion of our being to God does not turn away from knowledge. The bhakta of this path is the God-lover, who is also the God-knower, because by knowledge of his being comes the whole delight of his being. But it is in delight that knowledge fulfills itself, the knowledge of the transcendent in the delight of the transcendent, the knowledge of the universal in the delight of the universal Godhead, the knowledge of the individual manifestation in the delight of God in the individual, the knowledge of the impersonal in the pure delight of his impersonal being, the knowledge of the personal in the full delight of his personality, the knowledge of his qualities in their play in the delight of manifestation, the knowledge of the qualityless in the delight of his colorless existence and non-manifestation. So too, this God-lover will be the divine worker, not for the sake of works or for a self-regarding pleasure in action, but because in this way God expends the power of his being, and in his powers and their signs we find him. Because the divine will in works is the outflowing of the Godhead in the delight of its power, of divine being in the delight of divine force. He will feel perfect joy in the works and acts of the Beloved, because in them, too, he finds the Beloved. He will himself do all works, because through those works, too, the Lord of his being expresses his divine joy in him. When he works, he feels that he is expressing in act and power his oneness with that which he loves and adores. He feels the rapture of the will which he obeys, and with which all the force of his being is blissfully identified. So, too, again, this God-lover will seek after perfection, because perfection is the nature of the divine, and the more he grows into perfection, the more he feels the Beloved manifest in his natural being. Or he will simply grow in perfection like the blossoming of a flower because the divine is in him and the joy of the divine. And as that joy expands in him, soul and mind and life too expand naturally into their Godhead. At the same time, because he feels the divine in all, perfect within every limiting appearance, he will not have the sorrow of his imperfection. Nor will the seeking of the divine through life and the meeting of him in all the activities of his being and of the universal being be absent from the scope of his worship. All nature and all life will be to him at once a revelation and a fine trysting place, intellectual and aesthetic and dynamic activities, science and philosophy and life, thought and art and action will assume for him a diviner sanction and a greater meaning. He will seek them because of his clear sight of the divine through them and because of the delight of the divine in them. He will not be indeed attached to their appearances, for attachment is an obstacle to the Ananda. But because he possesses that pure, powerful, and perfect Ananda, which obtains everything but is dependent on nothing, and because he finds in them the ways and acts and signs, the becomings and the symbols and images of the beloved, he draws from them a rapture, which the normal mind that pursues them for themselves cannot attain or even dream. All this and more becomes part of the integral way and its consummation. The general power of delight is love, and the special mold which the joy of love takes is the vision of beauty. The God lover is the universal lover, and he embraces the all blissful and all beautiful. When universal love has seized on his heart, it is the decisive sign that the divine has taken possession of him. And when he has the vision of the all beautiful everywhere and can feel at all times the bliss of his embrace, that is the decisive sign that he has taken possession of the divine. Union is the consummation of love. But it is this mutual possession that gives it at once the acme and the largest reach of its intensity. It is the foundation of oneness in ecstasy. End of chapter 6, The Delight of the Divine, page 592.